Could you describe Nelson and McElraith in three words?
In three words. Dark, intense, but gay.
Hey there, listeners. Welcome or welcome back to another episode of the Try Reading Podcast. It's me, your book-obsessed host, Gabriel, but nobody's here for me. You're here for the amazing guest, as you should be, and I'm so excited to be joined by the one, the only, Kay Sterling. How are you doing?
Good. Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me. I'm doing great.
Wonderful. I am just so excited to have you on the podcast and to be talking with you today.
Thanks.
If you're a longtime listener, you'll have heard me talk about Kay and her books quite often. I am such a fan, and I'm just gagged to have you here today. It's just so exciting. And for those of you who don't know who she is, Kay Sterling writes like a demon and is a mother to Alex, Zoe, Stella, and numerous gay superheroes. She is also a history nerd, a Lord of the Rings fan, and a former counterintelligence agent. She has self-published dozens of MLM romance novels, including the popular Boys of Lake Cliff series and Happily Ever Alfie. Kay Sterling is known for fast-paced romantic thrillers and touching gay rom-coms. There might be goosebumps and some gore, but there's always true love and lots of laughter. Her most recent series is The Nannies of New York, which you might have heard me talk about 1 or 10 times on this podcast. This series consists of The Last Nanny in Manhattan, Giles Ashby Needs a Nanny, The Handy Nanny, and The Enchanting Nanny, which releases on August 17th, with even more books in this series to come. Kay's next series is Nelson and McElraith, with the first book releasing on September 28th. This romantic thriller is full of steamy but supernatural vibes, witchy vibes, and co-workers to don't talk to my partner like that to lovers, and I am here for it. I am just so excited to have you on the podcast today to talk all things romance, writing, publishing, and more. So thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, no. I'm really excited to get into this because, like I said, I love your podcast, and you know you've had some great authors on, so I'm kind of in amazing company. And really, like I said, it was kind of like a geek out moment for me. So yeah, I'm stoked to get into it.
Well, yay! That makes me so excited. Well, I do have to ask, what is your current read?
My current read. Well, I just finished Mistletoe and Mishigas, and then I have my best friend sent me Reese Ryan, Returning to Hummingbird Way, and it's number 2 in her series here. So that's going to be my next read, because I am editing one book right now, and I'm writing Nelson and McElraith while I'm editing The Enchanting Nanny, because the deadline is today. So I'm not reading anything at the moment, but this is my next one. So I'm in between, but that's my next read.
That's wonderful. I am very excited for I'm very excited for Nelson and McElraith, but also for Mistletoe and Mishigas.
It was so good. Wardell is really brilliant, and he just came out of nowhere with Teacher of the Year, and it was perfection. And I'm just a little bit mad that his debut was that good. But Mistletoe was just, I think it might have been just a touch better. And I just, read it. It's so cute. And Brody, there's this little boy Brody in there that will, like, I'm still just like, I'm so in love with this kid. Like, he's so chaotic and just random. And it's so, such a perfect, like, that kid, there's always that kid, and he's always my favorite. And he just captured him so perfectly. And like the whole, it's great. I'm still kind of having that little bit of a high from that. So cannot recommend it highly enough. It's good.
Wonderful. Well, my current read is Lie With Me, and it's originally written in French, so I hope I'm pronouncing the author's name right, but it's Philippe Besson, and then it was translated to English by Molly Ringwald, and it's very, very short, like novella almost. And it starts with the main character being an adult and a very well-established career. And he's in an interview, and he thinks he sees someone he knew from like a long time ago. And so he runs up to them, and this doesn't spoil anything for the listeners, but he runs up to them, and then it cuts to many years earlier when they were kids and teenagers, and when they sort of fell in love and how their relationship began. So it's like this just beautiful, like really short and sweet love story. And yeah, I'm just very excited for it. And yeah, so it's in the like first few pages, it's so good so far, but just really sweet and tender. But I'm so excited.
Well, you know, can I say that, like, from a writing perspective, it's so hard to get that right in a short story and to really convey that. And you have to, like, write from the gate. And it, just to be able to do that is always, like, I'm always, like, hats off to people who can do that in the short story format, because that's really challenging. That's a whole different level of writing that I think a lot of people kind of take for granted when you're reading short stories.
Yeah, no, it's so true. Yeah, just like this whole art to like, and like you said, just really making it work and making it all fit in. And yeah, well, I just have a couple book shout outs from previous guests, because September is quite a big release month for previous guests on this podcast, which is very exciting. So my September will be very booked and busy with reading. But first, on September 12th, The Borrow a Boyfriend Club by Paige Powers releases. And listeners, if you haven't listened to this episode, Paige's episode, it is just so funny and so fantastic. And this book will be just as amazing as he is. And I'm just so excited. It's like got all the good fake dating, really fun high school club vibes, and just everything I'm so excited for. And then on September 19th, there are three podcast guest releases. The first is Murder and Mamon by Mia P. Monansala, the fourth book in the Tita Rosie's Kitchen mystery series, which is a fabulous cozy culinary mystery series. And then All the Fighting Parts by Hannah V. Sawyer, which is a stunning and groundbreaking Me Too novel in verse that is definitely one of my top books of all time. And it brought me to tears. It was so fantastic. And last but not least, How to Find a Missing Girl by Victoria Vlasic, which is a YA thriller. And this book, oh my gosh, I can't say enough how obsessed I am with it. It's just a YA thriller. It's a sapphic detective agency. They're just like the perfect, like almost like Scooby-Doo vibes, with tons of Scooby-Doo references. And
that's
it's
awesome.
Just, it's so exciting. Yeah.
Like my face lit up. As soon as you said Scooby-Doo, that's one of my favorite. Yeah. Wait more for that.
Yeah. And my face was like gasping at every page turn. And it was just so exciting. So listeners, if any of these books are not on your radar, you should get ready for them because they are all going to be so exciting. But my first question for you is, what got you into the world of books and reading?
For me, I think it kind of goes back to childhood. I think for most people, that's kind of where you either settle into being a reader, or, you know, that kind of person is like, I gotta be outside and run around. But I was an army brat, so it was like always like in the car traveling in the summer. We were always just off seeing things if we were in a different state or a different country. So there's those long car trips, or just always being like the new kid every school year. So like, I didn't have a lot of friends. So I just always hidden books and just spent a lot of time there. And those kind of became a kind of a safe place for me when I was like the new kid or didn't, you know, feel comfortable in a new place. And then, yeah, I just had a really active imagination too. And just kind of was always just more, you know, have more involved with the friends in my head and going on adventures and just more just invested there than kind of what was going on around me. And I think it was just kind of a natural segue from just reading a lot to kind of just, that was just became like a way my brain works, just imagining, you know, different stories and stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's really wonderful because, you know, obviously, as a writer, and you know, books can be such a wonderful form of escapism, and you know, meeting all these different characters and seeing all these experiences within books, with, you know, and being able to escape from the world around you. And but I love that it was with the, you know, with you from such a young age. And have you always wanted to publish novels, or did that come later on?
I think I kind of always wanted to be a writer, but I think like a lot of people, I thought, well, I'll never actually be able to do it. So I went and found another career and got into that. And then, which I was in the military for a while. And it wasn't until I was a stay-at-home mom and kind of needed something to do with my brain that I kind of got into it. But yeah, it was kind of always like a I wish kind of goal, or I wish I could be, or, you know. So yeah, it wasn't until I kind of realized I could with self-publishing that it became like a reality.
Yeah. Once you sort of found that idea of like, oh, maybe this is something I could do, and what led you to self-publishing?
Well, it's kind of a funny story, but it was kind of my husband's fault, because I was doing the stay-at-home mom thing, and it was, I think a lot of people talk about being a stay-at-home parent and how you kind of lose yourself in that, and you feel like, you know, I'm not doing anything. I'm just raising 2-3 humans, you know, and creating, you know, and sustaining lives. But you tell yourself that that's not doing anything. And I got a little bit down, and my husband's like, well, babe, you know, you always wanted to be a writer. You always talked about wanting to write a book. Well, write a book, you know, just write a book. And I was like, but nobody's going to read it. And he was like, I'll read it. How about that? So I was like, okay. So I just passive aggressively started writing a romance novel. Because I, you know, when I thought about writing, it wasn't originally going to be romance. I thought maybe historical fiction for weird reasons, or suspense. But so it was kind of a passive aggressive thing, like, okay, well, I'll write a romance novel. And I was writing a bodice ripper because I had read so many, you know, when, you know, growing up too. And I loved those. So I thought, well, that would be the, like the thing he would enjoy the least. So I made it kind of a really steamy bodice ripper. And it was, you know, a lot of things like stories that I had worked on, you know, in my head when I couldn't sleep at night to kind of help with my anxiety. So I finished and I was like, here you go, babe. It's all done. And he's like, oh, I'm not reading that. And I was like, what? I was like, we had a deal. He's like, well, why don't you get it published? Send it off to a publisher. And I was like, no, it's never going to do anything. And I think I did just, you know, just to say I did it, send it off to a couple of publishers. But then meanwhile, I figured out, you know, the whole KDP thing, like that's when I discovered it. And I just went ahead and just said, well, we'll just see what happens. And we just tossed it out there, and it kind of took off and did okay for a little debut, you know, from a new author that, you know, but back then you could do that on KDP and Amazon.
Wow. Well, very, almost in a way, like very unexpected, but it ended up leading you to where you are now, which is,
it was a weird fluke and it worked out.
Right. Well, the end of your answer sort of led me perfectly into my next question, which was, after publishing your debut, what was sort of that experience like?
Like I said, it kind of took off. And back then, you know, romance was just really exploding on Amazon, and readers were really excited about finding all these things you couldn't find in a typical brick and mortar store. So it took off, and it really took me by surprise. And it was just this whole, and it still kind of takes me by surprise that, you know, people are walking around with, you know, my books in their pocket. And it just kind of really, like, I still kind of have that kind of like, I'll like astral project and be like, this is not happening. Like, it's still like, I still haven't gotten over that. Like, it just kind of blows my mind that people are out there reading things that I wrote. So yeah, that was kind of like the main thing, is just kind of going, you know, accepting like, okay, wow, I did it. And it, you know, it's a real thing now, I guess. But yeah, that was kind of a shock to me that it worked. And then I started getting emails from people asking about, you know, the next book and, you know, when that was coming, because it was originally like a series. So that was in itself kind of a weird thing, getting emails from people who'd read the book. And, you know, so I was just like, what? Just a thing I made on my computer and just stuck on the internet.
Right. Yeah. Wow. Well, that is so exciting. And I can only imagine, yeah, just that feeling of like, there's people out there reading these books. And yeah. But
I'm sure you get that too, though. Like, you record this and then you put it on there, but I'm sure it's kind of weird when you go back and you say, wait a minute, X thousand people have listened to this. Like, you know, like that's,
you're right. Yeah.
Trip, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's working.
And, right. Yeah, it is. It's just, it is a cool feeling. And also to like have something that like you created from your heart and that you're excited about, and then that other people are excited to read and or to listen to or to do whatever. Yeah, so you're right. It is a very exciting feeling. But yeah, so now here you are with many more books published. And the book that made me fall in love with you and your writing was The Last Nanny in Manhattan. And that is the first book in the Nannies of New York series. And this book is the story of Walker and Finn. Walker Cameron III might be one of the most feared men in Manhattan, but he's no match for his six-year-old triplets. After exhausting all other options, Finley Marshall is the grumpy widower's last hope. Luckily for the Camerons, Finn is a master of chaos and can calm even the most beastly of children. But Finn soon learns that the girls aren't the problem. It's their father. Still grieving and easily overwhelmed, Walker leaves the servants to cope with his little hellions. Finn wants to prove that he is the best nanny in the city and that his older brother Reed should start his own agency. Is Finn willing to risk life and limb to do it, though? Afraid to lose the most competent caregiver to ever cross his threshold, Walker agrees to an unusual set of terms. He'll give the girls more of his time and practice better parenting, with Finn as his guide. But Walker finds himself with a new and unexpected problem. For the first time in years, he's having very improper thoughts and can't stop thinking about Finn. Can he keep his feelings to himself, or will Walker fall for the last nanny in Manhattan, willing to take on the cursed Camerons? This book was so fabulous, and it was just the perfect introduction to this wonderful series. And yeah, it was just so wonderful. It had all of these amazing, happy vibes, but also it covered grief in a very wonderful way. And, you know, that loss has no timeline. And, but then also, like, you have these amazing, wonderful children in this story. And, like, you see, and I can say as, like, someone with a much younger sister, like, children know more than they let on, and like they're really paying attention, and just they were so hilarious and added so much comedic element to the story with the adults. And but I love the three of them so much, and I just, it's a wonderful love story, and this book, it's just so fun. And so I was instantly hooked, and I loved it so much. And so I do have to ask, what was the inspiration for The Last Nanny in Manhattan?
So I think you did ask, like, you were such a pro, and you sent me like a list of questions ahead of time so I could go through them and not sound like a nerd. But I think that this question will kind of fold up maybe three or four of your other questions that you'd asked. So originally I pitched this series to Harlequin and Karina, and I had access to an editor. I was very privileged at the time, who was acquiring there. And I said to them, I would like to write something fun and fluffy, like a rom-com, because I do my Kay Sterling thing, but my audience is very, very into the rom-sus, like intense thriller thing that I do. But I wanted a chance to do something just more fun and fluffy. So I said, I would really love to do a rom-com series. And they were like, great, you know, what are you thinking? And I said, what about The Babysitter's Club? Because that was something that I really enjoyed as a kid, those Scholastic books. And I said, but also I want something that feels like that kind of New York City fairy tale, that, like, you know, like a J-Lo kind of vehicle, like, you know, like one of those big, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, these are the kinds of stories that we don't usually get to see gay characters, you know, leading in. So I wanted that big New York fairy tale, but also I wanted the series to have kind of a Babysitter's Club vibe. And they were like, we love it. We love it. Throw together a pitch and let us look at it. And they accepted it. And I wrote, it was called, we had a different title and a different cover and everything. And we were in editing, and they decided to drop the series. So, and so for a while I did kind of set it to the side, and, you know, had my whole feelings over that. And it was like a really kind of like catastrophic moment. But then I went back to it and kind of re-released it with a different title and a different cover. And, but yeah, so the way it was born, or the way it came together, was kind of a calculated pitch. Was, you know, I want a soft, fun, fluffy rom-com series that will have, you know, like, two brothers, and then, you know, they'll be the first book, and they'll, you know, the older brother will end the last, you know, kind of book, you know, end the series. So that's kind of how that all came about.
Wow. Well, it shows also just that this perseverance and you have like, okay, it didn't work out with the publisher and then you found another way to make it work. And which I really love because I'm really glad this series is around and that.
Well, I think that's a great kind of conversation that I don't think a lot of authors talk about, because I didn't know that was a thing that could happen, and there was like a lot of shame there. But you know, and then I started learning that no, that does happen for various reasons. That doesn't always have anything to do with the book. And it took me a while to accept that, you know, it wasn't the book, you know, it was just a whole bunch of other factors. So once I, you know, kind of put some band-aids on my owies and, you know, got it back together and got a new cover and a new title, you know, it did great. It ended up being one of the best things that I think could have ever happened to me. Like, because I have zero regrets with how it worked out in the end, because I had a lot of freedom. And we do you did, you know, have send questions to talk about like the artwork and stuff, and that will, you know, it kind of just really all worked out, and it was just the best, honestly, the best scenario, or the best, it was the best resolution for that whole thing. It just worked out. It was meant to be that way.
Yeah. Well, that's so wonderful. And, so as you were saying, some of it ties into my other questions. And obviously, so it seemed you knew it was going to be this series and you had this idea of the two brothers sort of like bookending the story. But when you, whether it was when you had it ready, like were writing it for the publishers or when you were getting it ready to be self-published, what was that process like, sort of writing this story?
It was like I said, it was a great kind of change of pace for me to kind of step away from writing thrillers and mysteries and getting to focus on like the kid element. And you know, I wanted kids to be in it, but just the right amount. So it wasn't like, you know, like when you're watching a movie with kids, you're like, and it starts to become like an eye-rolling moment. It's just like,
Yeah.
oh, that's kind of. So I didn't want to go that far. It's just enough kids on page to make it feel like, you know, a fun rom-com, and to give us that kind of comedy moment. And plus I love kids, and like we were talking about with Wardell, just like knowing how to find the thing, like that spirit of a child, and kind of distilling it into like a few scenes, like, you know, trying to find, you know, what makes Charlotte so different than B, and B different from Amelia, and just, you know, kind of just sprinkle that in there here and there. And then it's just I really wanted a chance to kind of focus on families and what it takes to what each family needs, because each book is kind of we're looking at the different situation with each parent and what, you know, what they need to be a better parent, and it's just kind of exploring those different dynamics with each family, and how do you balance that and kind of heal that, and what does the nanny need to bring? And I love that kind of playing with the chemistry there, like what's this family missing, or what does this parent need to be happy with their kids and make their kids happy.
Right.
So it's really kind of fun exploring that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you really crafted that perfect amount of like, adding the children in because you're so right. It can be quite an eye roll moment after some point. But no, it's so perfect in these books. And after, The Last Nanny in Manhattan was published, what was the response like?
Oh, it was huge. I wanted to expand my audience and do something different. And then when we kind of parted ways with Karina on that, I didn't know if I would be able to reach an audience on my own. And that was kind of why I'd gone with them too, was, you know, to kind of break out of, you know, my little bubble, my little comfortable niche that I'd kind of made for myself. But it did. It just I think the cover, it was I really did not like the cover that I had with Karina originally, and I don't think the book would have done as well. The cover just it was a game changer for that book, and it just blew up. And then, you know, the book, like the feedback started coming in, and I was really surprised. It really did take me by surprise, because I didn't think that there would be the interest in that from me, and that I could make that part of my brand, like, 'cause I was really kind of stepping away from my established brand. But then it took off, and then I really hadn't explored Instagram as much, And it's just like, I'm sort of making all these friends on Instagram, and Bookstagram just kind of like opened up their arms and kind of were like, you know, come in here. And it was just, it was an amazing, amazing kind of change for me from a career and inspiration and motivation perspective as well. And really just, it was uplifting. And really, I've tried to kind of carry that into the writing. And I wanted the book and the series to feel like a hug for a reader, because the world is a mess and it's so scary.
Yeah.
And it, you know, I wanted it to be really fun and fluffy, but it ended up also being like a really fun kind of fluffy, loving kind of experience for me as well. Kind of venturing into a whole different kind of market that, again, I was not expecting to be able to do well in.
Right. Yeah, that's really so fabulous. And it is true that, you know, Bookstagram is really wonderful.
So
and yeah, and I mean, that's how I found out about The Last Nanny in Manhattan, was through Bookstagram. And so, yeah, it's really like, as much as I enjoy like looking for books and perusing the bookstore, it's like a lot of my book recommendations come from BookTok or Bookstagram. And if you're, you know, following the people that, you know, give recommendations you enjoy, they give you, you know, books that you enjoy reading. And it worked out perfectly that way. And yeah, so I'm really just so glad that it was just such a wonderful experience. And it was
it's a lovely community. It's a lovely community that, you know, it was just kind of great to kind of go real, oh, this is here. And
right,
it's not scary, because like long time I was like afraid to get in there and like, I'm gonna post the wrong thing, everyone's gonna hate me. And you know, but no, it's been really lovely and the people are just wonderful, wonderful. And it's been great to kind of experience my books more, you know, with readers, and to kind of see it from that perspective, instead of just always like just making books and pushing them out and not really getting to interact with readers as much.
Right. How did you decide to add art throughout the novels? Because it's really such a fantastic like addition.
Yeah, that again goes to the freedom part. It wasn't something that I could do when I was doing the series with Harlequin. Or it wasn't really anything that came up as, you know, a possibility with them. So once I realized that I could do anything I wanted with the series, I said, you know, I want to have some illustrations. And I was talking with my cover artist and I said, you know, can you give me some pictures to put inside the book? And they were like, absolutely, sure. How many do you want? So I kind of really started thinking, and Shel Silverstein is mentioned in the series quite a few times. And like, it's one of those kind of Easter eggs that a lot of the nannies have Shel Silverstein tattoos from Where the Sidewalk Ends or The Giving Tree on their body somewhere. So I really wanted the art inside the books to kind of have kind of a Shel Silverstein kind of feel. So some of the scenes that I've selected or some of the poses and stuff kind of are reminiscent of that. And kind of are supposed to have that same kind of vibe. So that's kind of where that came from, because it was like, oh, I can do this, so I'm going to do it. So yeah, it was just kind of embracing the freedom of taking back the series and doing it exactly like I wanted. Because initially they were like, okay, you can have an illustrated cover, but we're going to do this and this, and Salesforce wants to look like this. And I really wanted like pink, and they were like, no, no, no. So it was just like, all right, well, now it's mine. I'm doing all the things I want to do. So yeah, the art was kind of like a real, real big, big thing for me, because I had a specific vision style in mind. It was very Shel Silverstein kind of centric. So I got that with doing it myself.
I love that. Yeah, it is. I love how Shel Silverstein is mentioned throughout the series. And
it was a favorite as a kid. Again.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Of course. And yeah, I didn't even put that connection of like sort of his art and sort of like that inspiration of it with the art in your books, but it totally makes sense. And I love, yeah, all of the artwork that goes within the books is so perfect. And yeah, and I love how all the covers are like these very distinct colors. And I have to say, as someone who appreciates like looking at my bookshelves and like seeing this pink and then blue and then orange, it's just so wonderful on the shelf. And I'm very excited for the green. So yeah.
Thank you for noticing, because I really want, once the bindings are all together, to have a little rainbow there, you know, so we can see them all as a series, so they look really cute together like that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, yeah. I'm so excited. Well, do you have a favorite character or couple in the series?
I do. And I was thinking about this and I was like, this is going to surprise people, but not in the way that I think that you would imagine. Reed and Gavin, I think a lot of this series in the background is kind of a love story between these two, but it's not a romantic love story. Cause I know a lot of people were kind of shipping them and hoping that they were also going to be, but they're not going to be together. Cause they're like brothers and they love each other just deeply. And I'm going to get all weepy about it, thinking about it, because I think we're going to see that ultimately the series is like their loves is like a big, it's like the bedrock of the whole series. And we're going to learn in the last two books just how much they love each other and their friends and their little brothers and sisters, and especially Gavin. Like, but yeah, so they're as a couple, they are my favorites. They are kind of like the dads of the whole gang, in a way. And yeah, this is going to be kind of an ode to their little bromance that they have. This great love they have for each other. And even after they find their significant others, they're still going to be together living at Briarwood Terrace. They'll just live on separate floors, but their routine will stay almost identical because they can't live without each other. But yeah, and there's a lot of secrets that we're going to start seeing in The Enchanting Nanny about Gavin leading up to his book and this whole thing with Dash. There's a lot of teasers in The Enchanting Nanny there. But yeah, the whole thing with Gavin and Reed, I really wanted that to be a very strong force kind of in the background in the whole series. And I just, these two, just the way they love each other is so beautiful.
Yeah, it is. And you're so right. They are just like these dads of all of the other nannies. And yeah, it is really fun reading about them and getting to see them pop up within the stories. And I'm very excited for those hints for the next book after The Enchanting Nanny. I loved, like, in The Handy Nanny, getting like hints leading to The Enchanting Nanny. So it's always so exciting.
Yeah.
Well, now, I mean, as I had said earlier, The Enchanting Nanny will publish on August 17th. And does it feel different getting ready to publish The Enchanting Nanny compared to when you published your debut?
In a way, I am kind of starting from scratch because, unlike most of my books, this is a sapphic, a female-female romance. So, and I kind of knew going into it that I was kind of leaving a lot of the readership that I developed with the series, because female-female readers or sapphic readers are not necessarily the same market. There's not so much of an overlap. And a lot of, you know, male Achillean readers are not, you know, they're very hesitant to, you know, not all of them, but very hesitant to switch over, you know, so you can't assume that there's a big overlap in market. So, I've had to really kind of, go back to, you know, the drawing board and just kind of re-examine my whole marketing and branding around that and start from scratch on social media. And I haven't been doing great with that because I'm so bad at the whole business thing. And I'm just like, just let me write, leave me alone. I don't want to do anything but write. I'm a very anxious, awkward person, and nowhere is that more true than social media. And nothing brings out my inner anxieties and my imposter syndrome more than getting on social media. So I'm just abysmal at marketing and interacting with people to sell my books. So yeah, that has been a definite change, like starting from scratch there and trying to kind of fumble around and find something that works. And I haven't yet, and I'm hoping I will as we get closer to release day. So yeah, there's been a lot of anxiety around, you know, is anybody going to read it? You know, is there interest in it? You know, so there's the whole business angle around it that I'm definitely having to kind of start from scratch on there. So that's a very different from the rest of the series and the rest of my books. So it's like a whole new game to learn.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that, but it is true. And but I for one am so excited to read it. And I have loved seeing, you know, your promotion for it on social media. And even like it was the other day on your Instagram stories, you did that sort of like edited video of like the character sort of like moving across the screen, sort of telling the synopsis and the story of what this next book would be. And that made me so excited. But I'm very excited. And so far all of the books have had a playlist, so I assume this one will as well. But yeah. That's very exciting. And yeah, so I cannot wait to read it. And soon. So soon.
Yeah, so soon. It's like 4 days. Like, I only know this because I've got to like remember to post something on social media. And today is like the 4 more days post. So 4 days. So,
yeah.
Yeah. It's close. It's getting closer.
Yeah. Well, if you could turn the Nannies of New York series into anything that isn't a movie or a TV show, what would that be?
I kind of laughed at this question because I was like, what do you mean anything that isn't TV? Because we all, as authors right now, we want to be like, you know, a Netflix or an Amazon series, you know, or a movie. But it was also very interesting because I know that like I've always wanted, like, particularly with Lake Cliff, but this would be great for the Nannies, but like a manga series. Always like that's been like a bucket list kind of thing forever since, you know, I first, you know, started putting books out. Like, I would love to have something in manga. But also I've seen some interesting podcasts that do like serialized things with series, so that would be cool. I've been kind of wishing and hoping that I could do audiobooks for the Nanny books, but yeah, like a podcast series would be kind of cool for that. Those were like the two good answers I could come up with.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I love that. Yeah, it is true. There was a period of time, I think it was like in like the lockdown of the pandemic, and like I became obsessed with like those like serialized podcasts, because it was like, obviously there was reading, but it was like this whole nother story element, and you had like the voice acting and sound effects, and a lot of them were just like mystery or like thriller that I was listening to, but it would be so fun. And or manga, that would be so exciting as well.
I'm always like geeked about any type of, like, when we talk about the art, like seeing the characters in art form when I'm working with Iris, that's always just, it's almost addictive. Like, if I won the lottery, I'd probably spend half my money on just art, character art, just making more and more and more. Like, I would put art on every page of my books if I could, but I have to restrain myself because my budget is not infinite. But yeah, anytime I can see any version of my characters is always exciting, and it just brings them more to life. And that's so much fun.
Yeah. Well, I love that. And yes, art is so wonderful. And I've so enjoyed like receiving the art prints with the books. And I have like a whole art print wall in here. So it's so fun. You're right, to look at artwork. And
it's fun. And the love that goes into that, the authors, when they're collaborating with artists, there's so much love goes into that. And
oh, yeah.
And I love that you've got a whole wall of that.
Oh, yeah. Well, as I had mentioned earlier, your next book and next beginning to a new series after The Enchanting Nanny is Nelson and McElwraith, and I could not be more excited, and it sounds amazing, and no one wants a witch for a partner, and time is running out, and the deck is stacked against Professor Lennox Knox McElwraith. 5 girls have been abducted, but the FBI doesn't realize they're connected. There's also the matter of the dead girl in Newcastle. She was found tied to a tree, and Knox suspects one serial kidnapper and killer is responsible. An unorthodox expert on the occult, Knox is rumored to be a psychic and a witch, and a crackpot. The wily young professor has to prove he is not baddie or possibly a vampire, and that the cases are linked before the next full moon. If not, he fears the remaining girls will be sacrificed to a mythical god king. Everyone in the FBI hates Agent Grady Nelson. He has failed to live up to his legendary father's reputation within the Bureau and is almost universally despised for being an uptight do-gooder. Nelson's ready to kiss what's left of his career goodbye when he's ordered to work with the sketchy professor on what should be a nuisance case. The investigation turns into a professional minefield when Knox claims it's connected to an ancient Gaelic cult. Rules are broken and lines are crossed as Nelson falls under Knox's spell and begins to suspect his partner might be a real witch. Knox is a little bit witchcraft, Nelson a little bit Federal Bureau. Together, they are a wickedly good team, but can they find the missing girls before it's too late? Knox is prepared to sacrifice his own career and his life to save them. He'd also like to save Nelson, but is Knox ready to sacrifice his heart too? This book sounds absolutely amazing, and I'm just counting the days until I can read it. Just like all of these supernatural but exciting vibes and a new type of story, you know, because so far what I've read of yours is the Nannies of New York, and so this still this romance, but also this thrillerish and supernatural, and so I'm so excited. But since it is not out yet, could you describe Nelson and McElwraith in 3 words?
In 3 words. Dark, intense, but gay. So, yeah, I mean, it goes back to just getting to explore types of stories that we don't normally get to see gay characters being, you know, the leads for. So, yeah, I wanted something that would, it kind of has like supernatural in Mindhunter, kind of like a little bit of procedural, but you know, I loved Silence of the Lambs, and I'm always talking about like I want to do like Silence of the Lambs, but make it a rom-com kind of thing. but yeah, so it's got like all these elements, but these are not normally stories that we get to see, like, you know, an FBI agent who's the lead who's gay, and is like the kind of hard, you know, kind of stoic type and grumpy, right, and quiet, and then we have the savant professor who is, you know, it's also a story about nepotism, like 2 different types of nepotism. Like, you know, nepotism is just kicking Nelson's butt. Like, he's just down. It's just, you know, it's ruined his life, the nepotism. But in Knox's case, it's just lifted him, and he's just, you know, floated upwards through academia on, you know, a cloud of whatever, and just kind of stumbled into all this, you know, celebrity kind of academic status. Where was I going? So these are, but yeah, so he's like the kind of cocky, arrogant rock star academic who's, you know, the genius. And so again, we're getting to see a gay character play that kind of lead. So that's, you know, that's kind of where that comes from, and that's kind of the inspiration for that. And what I, you know, what I'm most excited about is a new way to kind of show, you know, gay characters, you know, in different lights and in different adventures.
Yeah, well, that makes me even more excited, and yeah, I cannot wait. What, I guess, are you most excited for when Nelson and McElwraith releases?
I guess kind of reintroducing myself to readers who came to me through the Nanny series, because now they are kind of more familiar with me as writing fluffier, funnier things, and I get to show you guys what I've been doing for the last almost 10 years with my other series, like with Laycliffe and Bisbee, because those are kind of more intense romantic thrillers, which is a hint of humor in them. So yeah, it's going to be like a whole new Kay Starling for you guys to meet.
Well, that's so exciting. And yeah, and everything so far about this book, just, I can't wait. The cover is so stunning. And yeah, I love just all of the tropes that were announced for the book. And yeah, September 28th, can't come soon enough. So,
well, it's right around the corner. And
I know.
I'm still writing it. I'm like, right? I gotta hurry up and get it written for him. It's like, yeah, it's kind of like the fires, like the flames are they're rising, and I'm trying to like sound relaxed, but yeah, it's great. Everything's it's fine. I'm so excited for your reading when it's done. But no, yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah, it's great.
Well, what would you say, if you can pick one thing or multiple things, is the best part about being an author?
The freedom. Again, I grew up as a kid reading books and either saying, you know, I wish I was in this story, or I wish, you know, my favorite actresses and they were in the story instead, or, you know, it was just having the freedom to take the stories that I wanted to read and write them myself. And then as an independent author, getting to tell them exactly the way I want to is, I think that's my favorite thing. And I think what keeps me going is the freedom and just the possibilities. There's just, I could do anything, you know, as an author, you could literally do anything. And that's amazing. That's still one of those, again, it's kind of like knowing that people want to read it, but also I could just literally make up anything I want and just run with it. And that's always going to be fun.
So true. Well, what a fantastic answer. And just that I can imagine just that freedom is so exciting and very endless with also a writer mind and with ideas flowing. And and I think, you know, talking with other, I've talked with a few content creators who have self-published books, and they, you know, had said similar things just about that sort of that freedom allows them to create the cover they want or tell the story they want and not be scared of publishing pushbacks or, you know, that you can get in traditional publishing. So, and especially with the story, you know, with stories that you write that are more marginalized in the publishing world. And so to be able to see those for other readers is, I can imagine, and as I can say from my experience, so meaningful and so wonderful. So thank you for that answer.
Thank you for, no, like the questions, like I said, like they, some of them were almost like the same questions that I've done so many podcasts, I've only three. It was like similar questions, but they were just a little bit different, so that I had to kind of think about them a little bit differently and approach them with and come up with different answers. So that's great. That was great. So,
oh, good. That makes me glad. What would be your advice for writers who are interested in self-publishing?
Again, embrace the freedom. It seems like it's really daunting, and there are so many things you have to do as a self-published author that I think that we don't expect it when it comes to like marketing and getting your product ready to self-publish. But just always embrace the freedom, because again, you can do anything. You literally make all the rules, you call all the shots, and there's ultimately you're accountable for whether the book does well. But again, just embrace the freedom and enjoy that part and kind of really let that be what guides you, and just always chase your joy when you're creating something. And if it doesn't give you joy, then it's probably not going to give the reader any joy, and the reader is going to connect with that kind of aspect of whatever it is you're creating. So as long as it's sparking joy, to quote our Queen Kondo, just always chase your joy, and if it's sparking, then the reader is going to feel that. It's going to jump off the page, or you know, your podcast or whatever you're making. So as long as you are always, you know, it's, you feel the magic, just focus on that, and just always look at, you know, where the potential is, instead of like, oh, I've got, like me, like right now, I've got 50,000 more book words to write. But no, I've got so much potential and possibility within these 50,000 words. And I, you know, this is an opportunity to dazzle, you know, Gabriel and all the readers. And so just, you know, just always just, yeah, focus on that part of the magic of what you can do.
What a perfect answer. And like you said, shifting your mindset and embracing your freedom and the magic. And I think that's just also a wonderful theme for all of the stories you've shared on this episode. But it's also just, what a perfect way to end an episode. Kay, I want to thank you for taking the time to be on this episode today. It was beyond iconic talking with you, and I loved all of your stories.
Oh, thank you for having me. I mean, this was magic too. Like I said, it was a dream come true, and I had a blast. Thank you.
Thank you. That means so much. And it was a dream come true for me too. I mean, oh my gosh. Well, where can the listeners find you?
Well, I'm much more active on Insta and Bookstagram now that I know that's one of my happy places. I have ksterlingbooks.com. I'm a little bit on Twitter, and But yeah, mostly there. And I have a newsletter that you can sign up through on my website that I try to shoot out at least once or twice a month with updates on upcoming releases. So yeah, if you want to sign up there, you can stay up to date on what's coming next. But yeah, kaysterlingbooks.com or catch me on Insta.
Wonderful. Well, do you have anything upcoming or current that you want to shout out or promote? I mean, of course, aside from the release of your upcoming books.
No, just please keep an eye on The Enchanting Nanny. Agnes and Penny's love story is going to be out soon. And it is, I tried to make it feel just as fun and full of summer as I could. So yeah. Pick that up and check that out, please. And then get ready for Nelson McElroy, because as soon as summer's over, I'm just all about spooky season.
Oh, yes.
Season, so I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, just those two things, really. And then for the holidays, we'll have Gavin and Dash's book coming out, and I've got to come up with a title for that soon. But yeah, so keep an eye out for that.
Wow, that is all so exciting. And thank you, everyone, for listening to today's episode of Try Reading. Don't forget to subscribe or follow the podcast. And if you'd like, you can write a review or rate the show. You can follow Try Reading on Instagram at Try Reading Podcast and on Twitter, aka X, I don't know, at Try Reading 2022 for now until it blows up. As always, you can find this show wherever you get your podcasts, and new episodes drop every other Friday. And you can buy books by the Try Reading authors through the bookshop.org link in the Try Reading link tree below. And yes, that includes Kay's books. They're not to be missed, trust me. And Kay, once again, I want to thank you for being here today. I am just so inspired and just so in awe of you. And it was just such a joy and honor to talk with you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This was great. Thank you.